Hello, and welcome to episode 15 of The Tangles, official companion podcast beneath thetangles.com. I'm your host, JP, known affectionately, or not, online as Japes and Japesland.
And I'm your co-host, Sean.
This month, we actually don't have any new announcements for you, so we're going to jump right into Otaku Diet.
Otaku Diet.
Alright, Sean, so this month, yet again, the last month we talked about Metal Gear, we were both playing the Phantom Pain, and I guess we could both probably talk an entire episode about that, but we're actually both consuming
we
the same thing.
We could easily fill up two episodes of that.
Oh, so much to talk about.
That ending.
But this month, again, we're actually consuming the same thing. Why don't you tell our listeners what that is?
This month, JP and I are both working our way, well, I should say following along with, because it hasn't quite finished yet, One Punch Man. And I have not read the manga. I know that now that I was introduced to the series through the anime, I came to learn that there was already a dedicated manga fan base, as is many times the case, and very vocal on what they were hoping to see from the series. But mm-hmm. I completely missed all of that. So apparently One Punch Man was already a phenomenon, and I totally missed it. But being introduced to it through the medium of anime has been a fantastic experience. I was not expecting it at all. I was actually a little worried about what I was going to have to talk about on this podcast for Otaku Diet, because I've been combing through anime list after anime list for the season, just trying to find something, trying to convince myself that I wanted to watch one of the series that was out, and I just couldn't do it. There was absolutely nothing. And I stumbled across a spread for One Punch Man, and my thoughts were basically, Studio Madhouse? That's a colorful poster. Maybe I'll watch the first episode.
So to give a little bit of a backstory on how I got into One Punch Man, well, actually, before that, why don't we talk a little bit about what's going on this season? So I'm watching a few, not too many. I know like a couple years ago I was following like 18 or 20, but
1 million every show that was airing.
Well, I used to have this rule, and Kaze, I think, still has this rule, where you just, the no-drop rule, basically. It's like, once you start it, you're locked into the end of the season. The idea I had was, well, maybe it will redeem itself by the end.
It's like the rosy-cheeked adolescence of anime watching.
Yeah. I mean, I always thought, like, well, if I can get through the first couple episodes, maybe by the end, it'll be good. But that's usually, if the anime sucks at the beginning, it sucks the whole way through.
Japan can't make bad anime.
Right. I love those Chinese cartoons. anyway, so I'm watching the second season of Is the Order a Rabbit. Sean doesn't care about that, so we won't talk about it.
I've never even heard of that. Rabbits, they're probably super cute and just make my eyes rot out of my head.
I'm also watching the new season of Utowarerumono, or Utowarerumono, which... Are you familiar with that, Sean?
I have actually heard of that. I watched 4 or 5 episodes of the original season, and I just made it to, like, 2 dog girls and cursed fantasy mask guy with the fan.
Yeah, it's pretty, what's the word I want to use?
And that super irritating village bumpkin guy that's always trying to show off, and he works for the local lord. I can't remember his name.
Oh, I don't remember, but the second season has another super irritating character, so I believe it.
I think he's what killed it for me, honestly.
It's been a while. It's honestly not that great, so I don't really recommend it unless you like the world. So
it's kind of like Rurouni Kenshin 90s fantasy-esque. I'm trying to think of another fantasy. Tenchō Muyō or something like that.
Really, the only thing that stands out to me about it is just furries everywhere.
Yep.
It's kind of like just a fetish fantasy.
That's,
I don't know,
90s fantasy, man. That's what I keep saying. Furry heaven. They're bringing it back. Run for your lives.
Anyways, let's not talk anymore about that. Let's go back to One Punch
by
Man.
All means.
So now, I haven't actually asked anyone about this, but I am 99.9% certain that it is a pun on Anpanman. Are you familiar with Anpanman? Okay,
nope.
Anpan is the anpan means that red bean paste.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's like the sweet bean bread, basically.
Oh, okay.
So the man is man, so it's anpan man. So it's a really, really popular children's like superhero in Japan.
Oh, okay.
So I noticed in Japanese, because they've adopted so many English words, when they say punch, they say panchi with a chi at the end.
Right.
But the title for One Punch Man is not One Panchi Man, it's Wampan Man.
Oh, so I see what you're saying.
I am fairly certain it's a pun on Anpanman. But
oh, the nuance of the Japanese linguistics.
That aside, I read the description of it, and I was like, I don't think this is for me. But Kaze was like, no, JP, you have to watch it. And I was like, I don't know. And then Sean, out of nowhere, just texts me. He's like, have you seen the first episode of One Punch Man?
Because you really need to.
And, yep, now I'm hooked. I honestly, I've done this, I think, probably 3 times this year, and it's always been wrong. But I am predicting this to be anime of the year.
I think this one might seal the deal. It doesn't have a lot of competition.
You know what they say? Fourth time's the charm.
What competition does it have?
Is the Order a rabbit, obviously?
He's just going to punch right through that. He's just going to destroy that. You see in the opening where there's like that super cute star mascot and he just destroys it? That's my prediction for that battle.
I was at work today. I am an ESL tutor part-time, and one of the other tutors didn't have any lessons at the time. I was like, dude, you have to see the opening for this crazy anime I just found called One Punch Man. He's like, ah, sure, I'm game. And yeah, it was hysterical.
The manic transitions between serious and humorous are just fantastic. Especially, his name's Saitama, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The hero Saitama, the One Punch Man himself, just the way that they draw his face, it's so hilarious. Whenever he is despondent or just kind of ho-hum and living his daily life, his face is just an oval. It's a bald oval with these eyes with no pupils, with just these black dots in them. But every once in a while, and for completely ridiculous reasons, he will become super serious, and then they draw his face with such fluidity and detail, and it's just fantastic.
You know, I'm absolutely flabbergasted by the attention to detail in the animation. Like, this ridiculous concept, why is it getting so much attention? It's like Nichijou.
Japan is always like that, though. It's just like, why is this getting such great animation? I mean, there was a scene in episode 4 where the paradise group or whatever, there's some super stereotypical group of ultra utopian villains that are trying to like overthrow society. And they animate like every syllable that this guy is screaming with immense detail. And it's just fantastic. It's like, why? Why? Why are you syncing, like, not just lip flapping, but syncing to Japanese dialogue and animating the lips with such fluidity? And it's just like an absurd line. And it just, Nichijou is a great comparison because it's like, what, wrestling with a deer. And it's this intense fluidity and incredible animation quality. And you're like, why? There's no reason. It's just the joy of the animation. Mm-hmm. And I think to me, that if it ends up being anime of the season for me, it will just be because to me it seems like a celebration of animation. Like, that's what it is. It's just like, look at this gorgeous fight scene. Look at these great techniques. Look at what we can do. You know, this is animation. And if you've been following this podcast, excuse me, for any length of time, you'll know that I'm really into the action as illustrating the themes. And the strength of the animation medium being the animation. You know, why sit around and have a soap opera or a stage play with characters that stand there and talk to each other and flap their lips? Why would you spend the time to animate that? You can just have live actors do that. If you're going to animate something, make it crazy. Make it something you couldn't do with live actors. Really take advantage of the medium. And One Punch Man just does that. Mm-hmm. All of the humor and all of the gags are visual. And just the amount of detail and that they put into these ridiculous sequences and the lengths they'll go for some of the slapstick humor is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that brings me to one point I have for it, is don't take it too seriously. Because I've heard of some people kind of complaining about it. Like, our very own Charles, I know, is not a huge fan of it. And I'm trying to remember how... Let me bring up his tweet so I get the exact wording. And this is not knocking him exactly, but I know there's a group of people out there who don't like it for this reason. I'll just cut this out.
Insert Jeopardy music here.
Ding, 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 ding. Okay. I mean, he just added another one. Here it is. All right. So Charles said on his Twitter at the Tangles, One Punch Man is cool and funny and all, but is there going to be any substance? If not, I'll probably drop it now. #too much anime. But I have to say, I just found, scrolling through his Twitter account that he just tweeted not too long ago, I thought I was going to drop One Punch Man after this week's episode, episode 4, but it's too cool to drop. Maybe next week, period.
You know, honestly, Charles, that's a perfect summary of One Punch Man. Like, just when you think it might overstay its gags, it just reinvents them in a more ridiculous and fascinating way. And honestly, I feel like it's an excellent reinterpretation of the one-off villain, which everyone always complains about in anime. It's like every episode, a new villain, a new resolution, you know, and it's all self-contained. And some people get irritated by the episodic nature.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like One Punch Man just like turns that into an art form.
Oh, yeah.
An absurd art form. And, you know, it's great. The one thing I will say, though, is like there's definitely, I don't know if they're going to go anywhere with this because I haven't read the manga, but it's absurd. But it's also satirical and kind of darkly profound when he starts talking about at the very end of episode four, and he's like, one wrong step, and I could have been one of them too. And he's Saitama's getting all upset because he didn't register to be a professional hero, and he thinks people think that he's weird and nobody knows who he is. And so it seems like they're actually doing a narrative about real life problems and identity crisis and like midlife crisis, but they're just dressing it up in this ridiculous setting. And I mean, it's glorious. Japan, and JP's actually was doing some writing, not for Beneath the Tangles per se, but actually in college about the Japanese culture and selling the Japanese culture of cool and marketing Japanese cool. And like One Punch Man, like that's what One Punch Man is. And I really feel like it's a return to what I would consider a real renaissance period or a real awakening period for Japanese animation, which was like the 80s with like a lot of Otomo stuff and Akira coming on the scene and then really cementing Ghost in the Shell is another big thing. And the Magnetic Rose short in the Memories sequence. I mean, just illustrating we can be serious, but we can also be comedic.
Stink Bomb.
Stink Bomb.
I think, yeah, that, well, that's part of the Memories.
Yeah,
Memories,
it's part of the Memories compendium. But whether we're serious or whether we're ridiculous, the animation quality is top notch. You know, like we're professionals, we're talented. So no matter what we do, we're going to present it to you like this. And there's been a lot of it from Madhouse too, because Madhouse was the original Ninja Scroll, which was like ultra violent, crazy 80s anime.
I don't recommend it to our listeners.
Indeed. You probably shouldn't watch it. But if you're just looking at it from an animation perspective, I see a lot of ties between that sort of thing and something like Redline or something like One Punch Man.
Oh, man, Redline.
There is a huge opposition. This is my opinion. This is just my observation from watching anime over the past 10 years. There seems to be competing forces for the future of anime going on right now. You've got the one, like, super commercialized, playing to archetypes, playing for ratings, a lot of... Is it Moe?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Is that the proper pronunciation? A lot of that and just catering to that, which also can dip into ecchi and like fan service. There's that whole side of Japanese animation. And then there's just like this crazy off the wall, super high quality animated stuff that's either ultra violent or ridiculous or colorful and off the wall, like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really interesting for me to watch play out. You got like Studio Ghibli in the middle, and then you've got like absolute filth and insanity on one side, and then you've got this crazy, zany Japanese stuff on the other side with excellent animation. It's just really interesting for me to watch it under Apple, and I'm curious to see where stuff like One Punch Man is going to fall in the landscape. Like, is it going to revolutionize and reinvigorate the industry? Is the animation going to go more in that direction, you know, for the next 5 or 10 years? Like, where is animation going? And shows like One Punch really make me wonder, like, what we're in for in the next 10 years.
Well, do you have any final comments before we go on to our interview section, Sean?
The only final thing I would add for this portion is, I don't think this is available yet, legally or otherwise, because it just came out in theaters in Japan, but I caught a trailer recently for a feature film animation by Studio Wit, who did Attack on Titan, and I think they also did Seraph of the End. It's called Empire of Corpses. I'm not sure the Japanese title, but the English title is going to be Empire of Corpses. I would say I highly recommend you checking it out. It caters to a very certain taste, so you got a lot of reanimation and Victorian era England type stuff.
Reanimation as in like of the dead.
Perhaps I should clarify. Like the whole Frankenstein zap someone with electricity, bring them back from the dead, and create life or create a monster. That sort of a setting. I like it when I see period piece anime that's trying to do something unusual, and I feel like this is something that might be good. So I would definitely, it's something I'm looking forward to. I would definitely recommend that any listeners that have an interest in that period or kind of off the wall anime, you check it out in the next couple months and keep an eye on it.
Yeah, definitely. Sean showed me the trailer just before we started recording, and I'd say I agree with everything he just said.
Cha-ching!
Yeah. All right, well, with that, we're going to move on to, I think, a guest you guys are really going to like. Every month on The Tangles, we like to take the chance to use our interview portion to welcome a guest from outside of our normal circles of influence and socialization. But with the growing size of the Beneath the Tangle staff, we really wanted to have the opportunity this month to introduce our listeners to our newest writer, Casey Koval, who also goes by the screen name Cutscene Addict. Hi, Casey.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. How about you?
Excellent. Looking forward to this.
Could you introduce yourself just briefly to our listeners?
Yeah, sure. I go by a couple names. I'm known as Cutscene Addict in the cosplay world. I'm big on cosplay. Digitally on the internet, I am a writer. I do some freelancing. I mainly write for Geeks Under Grace, which I'm the editor-in-chief for. I do a lot of reviewing work for them.
Yeah, we have a really good relationship with Geeks Under Grace, actually. Would you mind talking a little bit about that website and actually some of the connections that Beneath the Tangles has with it?
Yeah, two of our writers actually write for Beneath the Tangles, or vice versa. Michael also writes for you guys. He goes by Shimuru, I believe, on Beneath the Tangles. And I write for you guys as well. And really, Geeks Under Grace is kind of what Beneath the Tangles does, but on a broader level in terms of gaming, books, gadgets, movies, from that Christian perspective that we want to see that, you know, we don't always get to see out in the secular world.
So you and Michael scratch the otaku itch.
We do. We provide a lot of the anime section with articles at Geeks Under Grace. So we do help with that for sure.
That's great. And we'll make sure to provide a link at the bottom of the podcast page so our listeners can check out that site if they haven't already. Would you mind talking a little bit in even more about what you do online and offline beyond your freelance writing work in Geeks Under Grace, though?
Yeah, sure. Here at Beneath the Tangles, of course, I write the manga section called Between the Panels. I do that twice a month. On the internet, I do some writing for a couple other sites, Geekdom House, Florida Geek Scene, which I review local conventions in the Florida area. And From Japan Limited, which is an auction service overseas for Japanese merchandise. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
And then in the real world, I am going to school. I'm a student going after my BA degree in human communications.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also a PK, which is pastor's kid, not psychokinesis or whatever it means in the nerd world.
Well, you mentioned conventions earlier. Do you go to a lot of these conventions?
I go to probably two a month. Part of that is because I love cosplay and I love being out in the community and wearing my costumes. And part of that is because I work for Florida Geek Scene and I review the local conventions for them.
Oh, okay. So now does Florida Geek Scene then I encourage you to go to all of these and help you cover maybe some of your expenses?
That is the nicest part about it. You get in for free. Get in for free all week. It's really awesome. So I get to have a great time at the con and they get a free review and it works out pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool. I have a few friends that frequent a lot of conventions and they often run panels or will do security or other jobs for the convention itself that is what pays for all of their trips back and forth throughout the year.
Yeah, that is nice about the con scene is they do have a lot of ways for you to get in for free if you're willing to provide a service to them. I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, and I have some personal experience with that as well, but I think I'll save that for the actual episode after the interview.
Okay.
But could you talk a little bit more about some of your experience at these conventions and cosplay?
Sure. I began cosplaying. I went to my first con in 2012, so I'm somewhat new to the con scene. I've only been going about 5 years. Only 5 years. I know. I'm so old. No, my first convention was MegaCon in Florida, which is one of the largest conventions in the U.S. And I've made a few costumes since then. I love it as an art form. It's a kind of a way to embody a character that you either admire or that you just want to challenge yourself to wear, really. Mm-hmm. I like to do something really out of the ordinary with each one of my costumes. For example, when I cosplay Levi Ackerman from Attack on Titan, I built these giant wings of freedom that I wear on my back. So that's, you know, and it's something you don't see Levi cosplayers do. He's a very common character. So I like to just add a little creative twinge to it. And when I can, I really like to add a little bit of faith-based influence. When I cosplay L from Death Note, I carry around this large cross prop that's based on the cover of Volume 7 of the manga.
Mm-hmm.
And L being a Christ figure, it ties in. I get a lot of questions about that. And it's kind of an open forum for people to come up and say, hey, why are you carrying that cross? You know, it doesn't look out of place because Death Note has a lot of gothic architecture and,
yeah, absolutely,
you know, Christian imagery and things. And then I'm able to say, well, he's kind of a Christ figure in the series. And we start talking symbolism, and next thing you know, you're talking about faith, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I'd definitely like to spend a little bit more time talking about that, but could you rewind just a moment? I'm assuming most of our listeners, since they're listening to our podcast, know what cosplay is, but for those who don't, or for those who maybe don't know quite as much about it, could you explain just generally what is cosplay?
Sure. It's a wonderful pastime that devours all of your money. No. It's basically a professional dress-up, essentially. It's taking Halloween costuming to the next level. You basically find characters that you really like. It's usually a character in an anime or a game, but sometimes it's a comic book or a movie or a TV series. And you go to a convention or a con, which is a local gathering of fans and geeks of different fandoms, and you wear these cosplays. And sometimes people will go in character. And that's the play part of cosplay. It's costume play is the splicing of the words there.
Yeah, the Japanese like combining their English vocabulary.
Exactly. So some people will go and just wear the costume and have fun and be very casual about it. And some people will go full in character to the point where you swear you are talking to Captain Jack Sparrow or, you know, Master Chief or whoever it is. It's a really unique experience that kind of lets you be a celebrity for a day.
I have some more personal stories, but maybe I should save that for the main topic of the of the podcast.
I would love to hear them. So yeah. Either way, I will tune in.
We'll hold on that for just a few minutes, but you know, cosplay is a really, really interesting hobby, and I have a number of friends who do it. It's definitely very unique, and I think it's really cool how you get to pick all these characters that you have a vested interest in. So what are some of the characters that you've done? You mentioned Levi from Attack on Titan and L from Death Note. I know you do a lot, so I'm assuming there are more.
Yeah, I have a few. I've got a lot planned. Levi and L, I think, are the two that get the most love as far as people see them, and they're like, oh my goodness, you know, and they want photos and hugs and things of that nature. Hugs are super common at cons.
Glomping.
It's like glomping. Yeah, that's a that's an aggressive flying tackle hug for those of you who are looking in your dictionary for that word. It's a very open and welcoming atmosphere, but I've also cosplayed Beyond Birthday from Death Note. A lot of people are unfamiliar with that character. He's from one of the light novels.
Okay, actually. I was about to ask you.
You're like, wait a minute, I've seen Death Note. he's in one of the light novels called Another Note, and he's kind of a doppelganger for L, but he's the evil version of L, more or less. Huh. So I kind of created my own look for Beyond Birthday, so I wear him. I do Emma Sky from Ace Attorney. I do Ike from Fire Emblem Path of Radiance. And I do Riku from Kingdom Hearts. And I'd say those are the biggest ones that I've completed so far.
So it sounds like you give video games a lot of love.
I love my video games. Yeah. Especially those that don't get a lot of representation, like Ace Attorney, which until recent years when Dual Destiny was released was basically under the radar, and it's a fantastic series. So cosplay is kind of a way to flash a big advertisement sign for a franchise you love and say, hey, I love this franchise. It's so underrated. And you'll find people will flock to you and you create a conversation off of it. It's pretty cool.
Now, did you say cosplay there or crossplay?
I said cosplay, but I do crossplay.
Okay.
I can talk about that too.
Yeah, could you actually for a moment?
Sure. Crossplay is the act of going as a character whose gender you are not. So it's I'm female and it's me cosplaying as Levi, who's a male character. It goes either way. You could be a male cosplaying a female character. In the cosplay community, it's very common. A lot of people who are unfamiliar with it confuse it with cross-dressing, which it is not. cross-dressing is most of the time, I would say, an act to, you know, become the other gender, whereas cosplay is very much a performance. It's more about embodying a character who happens to be the opposite gender of you. And a lot of people do it because it's challenging and they enjoy the challenge. Some people do it because they like the character. Most of the time, for me, it's just I like this character, or, you know, the person who I'm cosplaying with in a group needs this character to go with them. That's how I ended up cosplaying Levi. My sister, who was on stilts with angel wings and a long angel dress, was Petra. And she was like, you have to do Levi. I'm like, okay, I'll do Levi.
So now, you mentioned earlier about how you like to integrate your faith into your cosplay. Well, if I can kind of reverse that question a little bit. Do you ever get any flack from, especially Christians, whenever you do crossplay?
That's a really good question. Because I'm a pastor's kid, you think this would be a great grounds for contention. And I occasionally do have people at my church come up and ask, you know, what is this thing you're doing? I'm seeing these pictures. And there's a little bit of concern and a little bit of maybe fear of the unknown there. And I explain it to them. But I've been lucky. I haven't gotten a lot of persecution. That's not a very good word, but I haven't gotten a lot of negative feedback based on that. But there are a lot of misconceptions involved with crossplay and cosplay in general. You know, because the immediate assumption is you're dressing as a character of the opposite sex. You must be homosexual. You must be whatever the stigma is there. And while some people do it as a part of their gender expression, I dare say a lot of them or most of them do it for other reasons. And for me, it's just sharing a character I love and, you know, or a trait of a character I really love.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a good way, to connect with people that are very different from you.
Definitely, because people will come up to you when you're dressed as this character and you're able to talk to them in a language they understand. Like what I was saying earlier, when I dress as L and I carry that cross around, people recognize L and, you know, I'm not Casey Koval, I'm L Lawliot. And people will come up to me and they want to talk about Death Note. They want to ask me about, you know, the cross. Why am I carrying it? What does it mean? And you create a sort of conversation that way.
Yeah, and I would say even very pragmatically that that idea applies to non-Christians as well. I mean, whether you're a Christian and you want to talk about your faith with people who don't agree with you, or you're not, and you just want to, I think, find some common ground with other people that you might not normally meet, that's cosplay is one way to do that, one avenue.
Definitely. It's a very open way of expressing yourself. People can see what fandoms you love very clearly on the outside. You're a walking advertisement or a walking forum. I would like to say you're dressed as a character from Death Note, so all the Death Note fans will come to you and you have that common ground instantly. You can connect, you can talk about what you enjoy. It's a big family. You know, conventions I consider big family reunions. Everyone is, most people, there's always a couple who are kind of, you know, cruel or misbehaving or whatever you'd call it.
Yeah.
But most of them are very friendly. They're very loving. They're very giving. They just want to befriend you and talk to you and celebrate what they love. So.
Yeah. And I think in some ways this can apply to the greater anime community. I've had a lot of people ask me just about, like, why is it that so many people like anime who like anime tend to kind of gravitate to the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's something about that. What's a good word for it? Well, yeah, it's kind of like a large extended family. It's like finding a bunch of people who you have some sort of connection with that you don't have with the greater populace.
Exactly. It's kind of that niche, that fandom. Fandoms are family, for better or worse, you know, and the people within them are people you can relate to.
Well, thank you for coming in this month, Casey.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed it.
And again, be sure to check out some of her articles on Beneath the Tangles and her work at Geeks Under Grace.
Yeah, talk to me in the comments. I'd love to carry on the conversation. Ask me challenging questions. I love it.
Thanks, Casey.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yep, JP, that was a pretty cool interview. Is this the first time that we've actually had someone talking about cosplay? I think Casey's the first, isn't she?
You know, I think in the past we had an episode, we talked a little bit about conventions, we talked about cosplay a bit, but I think this is the first time we've really focused in on this topic.
And, you know, it's high time, really. It's kind of strange we haven't done it sooner, because cosplay is a huge offshoot of anime and the animation medium.
Absolutely, and
I would say, you know, it's something that has really been taking popular culture by storm. Not just otaku culture, but it's really interesting for me to see how it's infiltrated a lot of social spheres that I wouldn't have necessarily expected, say, when I was like 15, to ever see conventions getting as recognized as they're getting. We've had guests on, you know, in the past that, you know, write for Forbes.
Oh yeah,
and they're writing about business and anime and conventions and how anime influences the market. I mean, it's just really cool for me to see that. And also, this isn't strictly Japanese in scope, but you could argue that the whole Marvel superhero craze, where, like, everyone's watching superhero movies now.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, they aired the trailer for The Force Awakening during Monday Night Football. So it's like, what? Wait, since when does football and Star Wars go together? But I think that the advent of conventions, and I know when I was attending college before I started working full time, that a lot of my friends would be going to conventions very regularly.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I was really opened up to, like, oh, there's this whole other side of it. I had been into it more for, like, oh, you know, anime is art and, like, super serious, philosophy, and let me try to find the best animes I can. And I had never really gotten involved in the convention scene, so it was really refreshing to hear, you know, Casey's take on conventions and getting that perspective. This is not something I've had a lot of experience with, although I did actually end up going to a couple conventions.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun. There's some crazy stories I may or may not share as the podcast progresses. But the convention scene is really fantastic, and to me illustrates what happens when that passion for something bleeds out into the wider culture, and how our passions and our interests can really influence our lives and the lives of people around us. I feel like that's a theme we've been kind of carrying through the last couple of podcasts, which is, like, you know, what does the media we watch say about us? And also, you know, why do we watch certain media, you know? And I think a natural progression of that is, you know, what happens when you take that passion out of, you know, your personal time and out of your home, and you take it to the culture at large, you know, and make a statement about who you are and what you like. And I think conventions and cosplay in particular really have the power and the capacity to do that. So, you know, I think it's a really great interview. And I also think that Casey's perspective is probably an experience that a lot of people actually got into anime to participate in.
Yeah. And I'd say I didn't seriously, if you can even say seriously, get into anime. When I say seriously, I guess I mean intentionally get into anime and Japanese products. 3 or 4 years ago. And I remember, yeah, I really got caught up into the convention cosplay scene whenever I was first a fan. I haven't been so much the last couple years. I wouldn't say I outgrew it as much as I just, my interests kind of changed. But 3 years ago, I will say my second convention was a really little convention on the East Coast called BonsaiCon. And that was actually, I think, when I first met Sean.
I think it was actually.
Because the first time I met him was, we were all waiting in the parking lot, like, when's this guy going to get here and take us to this convention? Like, shows up in his two-door, what was it?
Fashionably late, as always.
Oh, what was your car?
Mercury Cougar.
Mercury
with Cougar. A non-existent backseat. Get in, everyone.
Oh, man, that was a fun time, though. But I hadn't really done any cosplay yet. That was, I think, Sean's first foray into the cosplay scene.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, that was the Full Metal Alchemist cosplay.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be cosplaying Hughes, because Hughes is my man. Like,
oh, yeah, and if you saw a picture of Sean, you know he pretty much looks
I have a lot of visual similarities to Hughes. I could definitely pull it off. Like, the beard and the way, the color of his hair, the way he wears his hair, the glasses, even the style of my glasses was already like that before I even got into FMA. And I was like, this guy is like me in anime form, which I'm sure is a motivation for a lot of people to do cosplay. They really identify mm-hmm. with the character. So that was my first experience of like, oh man, like, I'm this guy. So FMA was ridiculously popular for a long time. Still popular, I guess. There hasn't been any new media for a while, but there's still a dedicated fan following. And the Amestrian military uniform is, like, absurdly easy to obtain. You just, like, go on Amazon, you pick your size, and, like, you're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I was dead set on cosplaying Hughes. I'm like, oh, I'll just order this thing. It's, like, $50. It'll be easy. I'll put it on. I can just be me, and I look like Hughes. And, like, you know, end of story. So the thing never shows up. And I'm at the con just like, great. Like, I ordered it, and it arrived after the con. And I'm like, well, fantastic. I wasted all that money. I've got nothing to do. So I think it was it Becca?
Yeah.
There was a girl at our group who was cosplaying. She had, like, multiple costumes she was going to wear. She was a little bit more experienced in the cosplay scene than me. And she had, like, multiple costumes for different days. So one of them was Edward Elric. And I was like, well, maybe I could squeeze into Becca's cosplay when she's cosplaying something else. So I put on this Edward Elric costume. That's, like, 3 sizes too small for me. But I managed to make it fit. And I zipped it up. And it was, like, a straight jacket. So I'm walking around in this female cut Edward Elric cosplay for like 2 hours. I think we even ran into Vic Mignogna, who was the voice of Edward Elric, and I'm like, hey Vic, nice to meet you. I'm wearing this like super slim down ridiculous Edward Elric costume with a wig too. Wasn't there was like a horrible blonde wig. So, you know, I looked absurd, but it was a fantastic experience. I really enjoyed getting to see other people, getting to go look at all this like cool Japanese imported media and statues and statuettes and all kinds of fun stuff, and I had a blast.
I will say I have never had as much fun at a convention as I did at that particular convention. I think it was just the perfect storm. We had a really good group. There were some people that I met for the first time, Sean being one of them, but we all got along super well. We just had a great time. It was a first year convention, and what that meant was it only had a couple hundred attendees, but I would say it was the size of a convention that could have held probably a couple hundred more. At least, I don't know if it was for sure, but my experience with conventions is they're usually super crowded, and there are lines for everything, and it's just not the ease of getting through places just because of warm bodies in the way.
Sure. And I've seen pictures of some of the larger cons. It's like just absolute madness.
Mm-hmm.
I can only imagine the stench. And I've heard stories. But yeah, JP is right. This one was nice because it was very nicely done and there was a lot there, but not as many people showed up because it was a first time venue. So the people who did show up just had free reign of the place.
Oh yeah.
And it was a great atmosphere. I'm really happy that was my first experience with a convention.
Yeah. I've tried out cosplay a couple times since then. Actually, that convention I was supposed to go as Sweden from Hatalia, just because there was a girl who's like, "Hey, I love Hatalia. You look like Sweden. I will make you a costume."
You do look like Sweden. It must be said. She was not lying.
Well, regardless, she said she would make me a costume, but it didn't really happen. So we did, like, we hacked together some last-minute thing. I just wore a blue t-shirt with the yellow
stripes. And, like, everyone knew that.
Yeah,
and I, like... Everyone was like, Sweden! And he's just like, yeah, I just gotta throw this on.
No, yeah, you're talking about Sean's like, yeah, I already look like you. Just put on the military jacket. I'm like, I literally just had a blue t-shirt with the Swedish flag on it.
That's all it took.
But, yeah, it was fun. After that, I did a Kaito cosplay, Vocaloid, and, you know, that was fun. I wore that to a couple conventions, and it's fun getting the attention for people who really like your character. And it was kind of fun doing the costume. Like, I have the jacket and the pants, a blue wig. I even painted my nails blue. That was kind of a pain. I don't think I'd do that again. there's actually a video somewhere on YouTube, I don't know if I'll link it, but of me playing a Kaito song on soprano saxophone wearing my Kaito costume.
I did not know such a video existed. You didn't know
that? Oh, okay, after the podcast, remind me, I'll show you.
Yep, that's going to happen.
Yeah, I guess I'll
just... That's a must watch.
At this point, I just have to link it, I guess.
It's too late now. It's already there. It's already in the comments section. Click it.
But man, that costume, I think... I'm a super self-conscious person in general, and so having the blue nails, like, after I was out of the costume, nail polish does not, like, really come off well, and it's kind of a pain, and I was planning on doing the costume the next day, and I was like, I really don't want to paint my nails again, like, I don't even want to do it once, much less twice, and so, anyway, we had to eat, so I went out with some people to Waffle House. And, you know, I don't know why I'm self-conscious at Waffle House of all
you
places.
Freak. But, what are you?
Yeah, like, we're at Waffle House. Like, no one's going to be looking down on you at Waffle House. You're already at Waffle House.
Yeah, it's like, you're already in the bottom. Yeah. Just enjoy your waffles.
But I remember the entire time I was, like, holding my fists, like, clenched in such a way that you couldn't see any of my nails. Because I was just like, I don't want any of these people.
Scarred for life. Well, it's a good thing I'm not self-conscious, or no one would have been graced with that fantastic Edward Elric cosplay that day.
Yeah, I guess now that I think about it, it really wasn't any worse than mine.
I was a little embarrassed when we ran into Vic. I was like, oh gosh. Of all the... I've been wanting to at least meet this guy for like 10 years, and look what I'm wearing. That's okay, he just blew me off. He probably doesn't remember who I am anymore.
The other costume I did to kind of finish up my little spiel was... I went to Otakon one year, and I actually did a full decked-out Washi costume. If you don't know who Washi is, he's also known as the Communicator, and he's from Haibane Renmei, which is a fairly obscure anime that we really promote at Beneath the Tangles, because a lot of it's really fantastic
because
symbolism.
Because Christianity.
Well, because Christianity. But, there's a character. He wears a very unique-looking mask, has, like, a big cloak and a staff. That was really fun, because... For all of my searching online, I could only find, like, two pictures of cosplays people had done with it. So it was pretty much all me. Like, you couldn't buy it anywhere because no one made it. We had to completely make it by hand. Like, I had figured out sewing.
And that's the other side of the experience, which Casey also referenced, like, artistically challenging yourself. Like, not just, there's the, for fun and for fellowship, but there's also a dedicated group of people. And it's really cool if you watch, like, competitions at some of the larger cons, the cosplay competitions. I mean, these people are not playing around. Like, this isn't cardboard cutouts, like Snake in a cardboard box cosplay, although those are fantastic.
Yeah.
I may do that yet. But, I mean, these are real artists. So it's really cool to see someone channeling such artistic talent into a hobby and a passion like that. You know what I mean? I really do enjoy seeing that. You know, I think so you're inspiring me now. you had your Haibane Renmei cosplay. I feel like if I ever did a cosplay that I would have to make, it would be probably Ashley Crichton from Fullmetal Alchemist Sacred Star of Milos, because he wears this like World War One trenches kind of military uniform. Mm-hmm. So I probably wouldn't make it, but I would have to assemble it. I would probably have to track down all the parts, like the boots and the trouser combat pants, and then the the cape. So that would be really fun to like assemble that costume. And then the one thing I would have to either make or have someone else make to do custom is the mask, because he's a character that wears like a full mask that clips down onto his head. I feel like that would be a lot of fun to mold or try to make.
Yeah, I mean, my costume, it took a lot of time. I don't know if I'd have it in me now that I know what it took to make another one, at least of that detail. But I mean,
you have the experience.
Yeah, we had to make everything. The staff was, I mean, like, sanded and finished stick that looks like a staff with, like, a a fence post cover on the top with little wings cut out of like plexiglass.
Wow, yeah.
Like it's
pretty elaborate.
There's a lot of detail. The mask and everything made out of that cast casing, whatever that is. Like for a medical cast.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'm not sure the actual name for it, yeah. But I know what you're referring to.
But yeah, it was a lot of work, but it was cool. I mean, the payoff, I don't know. Unfortunately, because Hibernate Renmei is not well known, you have the benefit of being the only cosplayer of that series, which is kind of cool. You get a little bit of fame from the people who know what it is, but then on the other hand, like not that many people know what it is. So while there's people like flocking around all the Attack on Titan cosplayers, like people are just like, "Who's that freak in the hood with the mask?" And the other interesting thing too, my final comment is, Hibernate Renmei is not a particularly high budget project. Like if you look at the animation, like it's good enough to tell a story, but it's not anything more than that.
Right.
Like what we're talking about before with One Punch Man. Like
it's not that.
It's plenty of mouth flapping, just kind of sliding around wherever they can, reusing backgrounds and stuff. It looks great for what it is.
Sure, yeah.
But I mean, it's a drama. That said, the shots of the character are not consistent, and so you know you have shots where like the guy's mask is not covering his whole face, and then sometimes it's covering more than his whole face, and then sometimes the staff is a different size. So I had to take some creative liberties on mine. It's like, all right, well, which one am I going to pick? Am I doing the small mask or am I doing the big mask? Whatever. That was kind of fun.
So what's the bottom line here? Why do people cosplay? What is the significance of cosplay? Because Casey, you know, I wouldn't want to neglect this portion of her interview. It's the part that I enjoyed most was when she got into the intricacies of cosplaying or crossplaying a male or a female character and some of the stigmas that are associated with mm-hmm. that, and how an outsider might perceive cosplay in Japanese animation. So the question is, like, why do people choose to cosplay and potentially experience uncomfortable situations that, you know, people that may know them that don't approve of their hobbies? Mm-hmm. What are they expressing when they cosplay? What do you think? Kicking it into philosophy mode here.
Jeez, I'm used to springing these questions on you, not the other way around.
Oh, I got you this one. The co-host is taking the reins.
You know, like, selecting a character that you can completely devote yourself to, like, I don't, yeah, like you're saying, it takes a lot. I don't know if guts is the word I want to use, but
it can in certain situations. It depends on if you have a supportive family and friends or if you're the Lone Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
But it can take a lot of guts depending on where you come from.
I mean, obviously, you have to place a lot of personal importance on something like that. Some people look down on it, and I don't really know why. But you know, it's not socially acceptable from certain perspectives. So people look down on it. So for you to do something that a lot of people look down on, like, you have to be really fully devoted to whatever that is.
Indeed. So why dress up?
So why dress up?
I have an answer.
I wish you would just give me the answer.
Out with it. All right. Well, at least from my perspective, my opinion on it is like, it really gets into the superhero persona. It's a thing you see a lot, even in superhero stories, is like Clark, the most obvious one, Superman, just to be basic, to get the point across. You got Clark Kent, or ordinary average guy. You know, he's a do-gooder. He works at a, you know, for a newspaper, whatever. He's just like an unassuming person. But then he puts on his costume and he transforms into something else. Now he's a superhero. So that theme of transformation, or the desire to be transformed, I think lays at the heart of why people dress up as either A, characters they admire, like if they were real, they would be my role model, or I like these attributes, they're good attributes that I want to express, or maybe a more literal, I actually want to become in real life what this character represents in the show kind of thing. Or, you know, maybe just for fun. But I think even people who are just playing around and doing it for kicks and just have a good time with friends, there's power in that idea of transformation. And that would be my answer. Like, what makes the desire that everyone has, that what they would like to believe about themselves is they may seem ordinary and have an everyday routine, but like there is something inside of them that can transform to become something greater. And I feel like that's a theme you can really apply philosophically to many faith traditions, but Christianity in particular. You know, dovetailing even off of Hibernate Renmei, that show is very much dedicated to like metamorphosis and transformation. Mm-hmm. And the whole show is basically a halfway house for these souls and where they're going and what would they become. What would they discover about themselves if they don't have any memories and they live their lives and their actions end up defining them. What they do mm-hmm. and how they do it ends up helping to reveal to these people who they really were, even without having the direct benefit of their memories. And so I feel like that aspect of taking action and discovering yourself through action and transforming yourself is like a huge thing behind cosplay. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it's just a momentary, haha, isn't that neat, whatever, with my friends, or the people that take it seriously as an artistic medium, or the people that crossplay and want to express maybe they're a male and they dress as a female character, or they're a female and they dress as a male character. What does that mean? And not to get too grandiose, but, you know, I'll just drop down the idea from the Greek mythology of Hermes and the staff of Hermes and the wand of Hermes and the concept of, like, the hermaphrodite. The fact that within every person there's, like, a male aspect or a female aspect. And just because you're a male doesn't mean you don't have feminine traits. And just because you're a female doesn't mean you can't have masculine traits. And the maturity to grow and embrace different sides of yourself and express them, to me, is at the heart of a lot of cool cosplay. And it's just a creative expression. It's mm-hmm. saying, I don't care if society approves or not, this is who I am as an individual, and I want to express that. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, it's just a fundamental aspect of who people are, mm-hmm. what humans are. But by extension, if you want to apply it to religion or spirituality or Christianity, the entire Bible, well, not even particularly the New Testament. The Old and New Testament of the Bible are very much concerned with the concept of transformation mm-hmm. from an old covenant to a new covenant,
yeah.
from you know, the life of the body of sin to the glorified body. And the physical and literal transmutation or transformation of the human race into the church, basically the body of Christ, from, you know, the sin of Adam to the glory of Christ, the second Adam. The whole Bible is about transformation. And a lot of the most revered stories are also about transformation, mm-hmm. you know, an internal spiritual metamorphosis and an outward physical manifestation of that triumph. You can take that all the way back through poetry and epic literature, through the Norse sagas, back to, you know, Hercules, the archetypal hero who, you know, is basically set among the stars and transfigured because of his heroic efforts. And so I feel like cosplay is a pop culture expression of that deep-seated desire. What do you think about that, Jamie? Any thoughts on that, Jamie?
You know what? You just blew my mind right there, Sean. I think you're right. There's I think some people would scoff at the idea of something that grand being like the inspiration for dress up, glorified dress up. But I think those people would be ignoring like the subconscious, like
yeah, and also like. Modern society is very compartmentalized. If you look at the way corporations are run, the way most jobs are run, cubicle based jobs or customer service based jobs, a lot of people, you know, they live in a box, their house, they ride to work in a box, their car, they work in a box, their office, they shop in a box, Walmart, they drive home in a box, and they go to sleep in a box, their bed, they live in a box. So they're, I feel like there's definitely a desire to break out from that routine.
Mm-hmm.
And cosplay is one manifestation of that. By no means the only, by no means the grandiose sum total of philosophy or whatever, that this is the new way people express themselves. It's just one of many ways. But I've noticed many things like, you know, a renaissance of medieval sword fighting and sword fighting clubs and people wanting to relearn ancient martial arts. It's like establishing a connection with the past, with the archetypes of the past, with the heroes of the past, with the stories of the past. You know, like, a lot of modern society is about discarding the old. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Every new year, there's a new model of computer. There's a new model of iPhone. You know, the old ones get thrown away. Things aren't built to last anymore. Everything is progressing so quickly. Technology is advancing. Society is changing. You know, languages are integrating. So it's really easy for people to feel lost. I know I feel lost sometimes in that environment, you know, in that modern setting. And sometimes I feel like, oh, you know, back in the day, a couple hundred years ago, oh, it would have been so much better. You had to write letters to people. Oh, the romance of that. I bet if you lived a couple hundred years ago, you'd just be complaining there was no AC. You know, you had to poop in a chamber pot or something. So they'd just be like, what are you talking about? But, you know, there's always that desire to connect with the past and the customs of humanity as a whole. And I feel like cosplay taps into that. taps into that desire.
Yeah, I agree on a number of levels. And there are definitely a number of topics that we brought up in passing between some of the mythology you've raised. And we kind of talked a little bit about the topic of gender dysphoria. But if you're interested in that, I recommend you check out some of Charles's posts on the matter, which reflects the views of Beneath the Tangles as a whole. But with that said, I believe it's time to move on to listener mail. Listener mail.
For tonight's listener mail, we only have one question. It's an anonymous question. And the question is this. Out of anime, manga, light novels, video games, and visual novels, what is your favorite otaku medium? You want to kick it off, JP? What would you choose?
Sure. I think, well, before I say which one is my favorite, I'd like to list a little bit of what I think is good and bad about each of them. So, we talk about anime. That's probably, I don't know, it's probably tied as my second favorite. It's really hard for me to pick favorites, because they all have pros and cons, regardless.
But you have to.
Yeah.
The question demands it.
Anime has, we've talked about this, anime has this philosophy of motion.
Yes.
We've talked about throughout the podcast. It's something that you don't quite get the same way in any of the other mediums. You almost kind of get there. It depends. Well, manga kind of has the same idea.
You have to use your imagination a little more in manga, but it's almost the same principle of the keyframes in animation. You're not actually animating every detail. You're using keyframes to suggest.
Mm-hmm.
So the manga is just like, you take that to the nth degree, because there's no actual animation. So your keyframes have to be really suggestive, because they're your panels, and there's no sound or color.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but you're right. It's a similar technique.
Yeah. And that said, I had a conversation with my brother not too long ago, and just with Sean before the podcast, where everything kind of falls... We're applying this specifically to video games, but I think you can apply it to other mediums, where everything kind of falls on a spectrum of, like, where the storyteller is telling the story, and where you are telling the story via your interpretation of it, basically.
Right.
Or your
own creation. One of the reasons why a lot of people say books are always better than movies, because can you really match the power of your imagination to fill in the gaps? You know, well, unless a movie's masterful, you would have to say, oh, no, because, you know, I could have imagined that so much better. Whereas with a book, a good author leaves enough to suggestion that you create the best possible story out of his writing.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. So, in anime, you know, we have to acknowledge that most anime is terrible. But, like, let's be honest. It's just like everything. Most of everything is terrible. Like, only a few things really last. But I think that a masterfully crafted anime tells exactly what the storyteller wants you to be told. And it does that via the colors, the animation, the visuals you're seeing on the screen, everything drawn specifically for you to see.
Total control of the director over the medium.
Yeah. But then it also gives you the benefit of sound. So that's music, which is huge. Music is enormous. Like, I used to downplay that a lot. But yeah. Music
the emotional suggestion that can be created by music, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
Absolutely.
Like, I guess the original Star Wars movies, just to throw an offbeat, like, obviously John Williams is, like, hugely famous for the Star Wars soundtracks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think rightly so. I went back and I actually got a hold of some unedited fan edits of the original three movies. Kind of a Star Wars fan. Getting a little bit hyped for the new movie. And I just realized, wow, like, these movies are just, you know, they're just stereotypical archetypal movies with cheesy acting. That's fun. You know, good cheesy, not bad cheesy. But why do so many people love them? Well, it's the music, man. Like, Luke looking out over the desert, yearning for something more in his life, and then the John Williams score just comes in, and it's like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, yeah, that's huge. And you also have the voices, too. I mean, part of sound.
Mm-hmm.
You move a little bit... Now, this is all just talking about linear storytelling. You move manga, that's a little bit closer to the other end of the spectrum, like, more in the middle. You have elements of what you had in anime, but you strip out, oftentimes you strip out color, you strip out all the in-between animation, the audio, yeah, more of it is being created in your mind. And then you go to light novels, that's like the far extreme. Like, you don't Well, light novels usually have a handful of pictures, but they're sparse, few and far between. Pretty much words. Like you're creating everything they're telling you, but you're creating it in your head. So now we go to video games. Video games are kind of a different beast compared to those because it's completely interactive. Like, now there are linear games there too, but even those, like, you are moving the character. Like, you kind of become the character.
It's a unique medium. I think it has a lot of potential that's just now starting to get tapped. Because you get that, it's like your hands are controlling the character's emotions.
Yeah.
If you're watching a movie, you're a passive observer.
Mm-hmm.
In a really great movie, you become actively involved in it. I would say, you know, something like Mad Max Fury Road or something like that. I was actively involved in that movie. I felt like I was there. The heart rate was up. You know, the director pulled me in with, like, you know, the devices he used to direct the movie. And so you can be, but video games, like, by default, even if it's a horrible video game, like, you're in control of that horrible video game. You have some kind of investment there. Whether it's boredom and apathy or whether it's amazement, you know, you are an active participant manipulating the character. So I think that's a really cool potential for that medium. So, like you're saying, every medium has its unique aspects, its pros and its cons.
Mm-hmm.
But between all of those, what is your favorite? It's probably what the question is getting at. What do you favor? What's your favorite technique for communicating a story?
Yeah, and this is leading up to my final answer. You'll probably notice I've neglected to mention one of them.
Indeed.
And, you know, I have to attach the asterisk that, like, all of these have terrible examples. And so my favorite is visual novel. Yet, I only say that because there are just a couple that I feel are so incredibly well executed that they earn the title for visual novels of being the superior medium. And that, again, the asterisk that most visual novels are terrible, like absolutely awful abominations. and much worse than most of the other
people die mediums. When they're killed, JP.
Fate's Day, or Fate reference right there. Mm-hmm. But that said, the reason I love visual novels is you have the combination of the interactivity of a video game. In fact, visual novels are told from a first-person perspective. Like, you're even more inserted into that. You have the written aspect of the light novel. Like, everything's being explained to you via text. Like, you have to come up with in your mind, but then you also have the still frame animations. No, I shouldn't say animations. The still frame images given in something like a manga. But then you also have the sound, both sometimes voice acting and generally music as well, that accompanies the visuals that you have from anime. So to me, it's like the perfect amalgam of all of the other mediums that are mentioned. But that's just me, and that's examples like a particularly Rewrite, I think, is a fantastic visual novel if you can get past a couple of its issues. Little Busters has some great examples as well. And, Narcissus, the two entries in that are just wonderful. But how about you, Sean? I've gone on a little too long.
You know, it's really difficult. My first go-to answer was anime. And, like, over the course of the podcast, I don't think anyone who listened to any of my opinions about anime would be surprised by that. Because I'm all about the philosophy of action and seeing archetypes and seeing concepts brought to life visually. Because I really think that just art mirroring life, it's my same opinion about life, is, like, there's nothing more powerful than seeing a philosophy in action. Like, you can talk about doing good things all the time, you know, but, like, doing a good thing or witnessing someone doing a good thing is very powerful. It can bring people to tears. That's why people always watch videos on YouTube, like the random Good Samaritan, like saving a baby or pushing someone out of the way of a train or something. Everyone loves those videos. Because it's like, in the world of chaotic things, with all this bad and questionable morality going on, there's this one random person out there and he's actually, or she is actually, doing what they profess to believe. So, shrinking that, you know, philosophy and theology down to the scale of entertainment, that's kind of what anime has the potential to do. Now, a lot of anime is garbage. And a lot of anime, while not garbage, doesn't live up to its full potential because of budget reasons or whatever. There's a million reasons it could be. But the rare few, just like JP says, you know, the rare few that really pull off the execution, it makes it all worthwhile. When you see some raw talent get behind some pens and ink or some computers and create fluid, living, breathing worlds that are 100% self-contained. There's no CGI. It's all from the creator's pen or from the mind of the team that's putting it together. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, for me, that's hard to top. The only thing that might perhaps do it on my 50-50 is the manga side of the equation. And the reason I say that is I think one of the unique strengths of manga that leads me to kind of want to pick that is the potential for the unity in the artistic vision. Like in anime, you got a committee, you got a bunch of different animators doing individual scenes, and you know, some scenes might look better than the others because you have a more talented animator or the star animator doing an action sequence. And it just goes back to like the in-between animators that are just like, here, slaves, animate these things in between the keyframes, you know? So, but in a manga, you know, ostensibly you don't have as much of that. You've got one person who is authoring the story and is drawing the majority of the story. Mm-hmm. So you get a more cohesive artistic vision. And in that sense, I think it's closer to a book. And in fact, you know, it's in a tankobon. So, you know, it is kind of a book. It's got a lot of pictures in it. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it retains some of the strengths of anime, which is the philosophy of action. But you use your imagination to fill in the gaps more, which is also the strength of a book, which is that, you know, you use your imagination to fill out the universe. You also do that in a manga, which by default almost makes it better than anything someone could show you. You know what I mean? Because imagination is a powerful thing. Mm-hmm. So forced to choose between the two, it is very difficult. But I would say my answer to this question is manga. And I haven't even read that many mangas, but the mangas that I have read have had a profound impact on me. And those would be The Monster, Full Metal Alchemist, Emma Victorian Romance, the Evangelion manga, which is divisive among some of the fan base, but I really loved its alternate take on the Eva series. And Berserk, which is still ongoing. I mean, my lord, I don't even know what volume that's on. It's on like 40, and it's still going. And the story has completely changed tone and genre like 3 times. But even if it ends up being a horrible ending, the first like 20 books of Berserk are some of the most creative, interesting, dark, you know, tragic and redemptive things that I've seen. And I love that period. One of the cool things about Berserk is it's set in this kind of fantasy, dark fantasy, medieval era. Mm-hmm. And the animation style actually looks like a woodcut, like you would see out of a 15th or 16th century woodcut illustration. Mm-hmm. So that stylistic choice is fantastic. So, you know, I think my answer to this question would be manga because of the cohesion, the authorial vision it affords, and also the suggestion and the ability of a good manga writer to put in his keyframes, so to speak, and leave the rest to the imagination of the reader, the timing of the blows, the sound effects, the movement. I like that. I like being given that control over someone else's story to flesh it out in my own mind. And while I love anime, I think manga in several key instances has a superior telling of the story, Full Metal Alchemist being one of them. So,
talk much longer, you might convince me to change my answer, Sean.
I better shut up then. We need diversity here.
Well, I think that about wraps up this episode of The Tangles. So if you enjoyed what you heard in today's interview, be sure to check out more of Casey's work at our site, beneaththetangles.com, geeksundergrace.com, where she's the editor, and also some of her cosplay on our DeviantArt, which we'll have linked on the podcast page. And as always, for more articles and media on the intersection of otaku culture and faith, check out beneaththetangles.com. See you later, guys.
Till next time, everyone.
Thanks for listening to this month's episode of The Tangles, official companion podcast to beneaththetangles.com. Be sure to check out our full site for more articles and analyses on the intersection of otaku culture and faith. If you would like to submit a question, send an email to thetangles@outlook.com. Also, be sure to follow our Twitter, @AnimeTangles, and like our Facebook page, Beneath the Tangles, and rate and review The Tangles on iTunes. Featured opening and closing songs are Japanese Dream by Duke Ellington's Orchestra and Blue Piano Stomp by Johnny Dodds, available in the public domain. Again, thanks for listening, and we hope you'll tune in next time for The Tangles.
All right, do we have any blooper material?
I don't know.
This says, nothing is written on stone, but ironically, it's written on stone.
Ingenious.